Blog Talk Radio.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us again this week for On Point. And I'm your host, A. Trey, and I have with me here Dr. J. Moore, professor. And
good morning.
There you go. That was a little bit interesting right there. Hey, we want to thank everybody for paying attention, for listening, and for giving us your support. We get some of your feedback on Facebook and some of the texts and in the email. So thank you so very much. We appreciate you. This week, we're going to have our segment, the State of the State. We want to address education, charter school information. And actually, I'm gonna let Jay bring that in for us today.
All right, well, good morning. I have on the line with us Mr. Paul Houston, and he's a very dear friend of mine. We go back a long, long time. His experience, he's worked in the medical field, the automotive field. He's worked with Saturn. He's a process specialist, and he also works a little bit as a substitute teacher. Mr. Houston, how are you this morning?
I'm well. Glad to be with you.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you for joining us this morning. We really appreciate you taking time out of a Saturday to visit with us and elucidate us on some of the unknown points that we deal with. I know you and I had a conversation, and I found out some pretty interesting information. So that's why I wanted to have you on, because I wanted some of that information out there, because I think that as a parent, there's some of the information that's out there we just know about. So would you kind of enlighten us, bring us up to speed a little bit on what you've experienced?
Well, sure. As James mentioned, I've been a substitute teacher for about the last 4 years, and I substitute teach in three different school districts, the Avondale School District, the Littleton School District, and the Pendergast School District. And when you tally the number of schools in each district, that totals more than 20 different schools. I focus primarily on 6th, 7th, and 8th grade classes. And I thought I would give charter schools a look-see. I had a friend that I had worked with in one of the public schools in the Littleton District that went to work for a charter school in Goodyear. Bradley Academy of Excellence is the name of the school. And my primary role there was to take a long-term assignment for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade science. And that's where my experience has been as a substitute teacher. And I thought I could bring some support to the charter school there in Goodyear. Well, long story short on it is, they had requested some specific goals for me. And one was to mentor some of the male students in particular. They're primarily Black and Hispanic. And they wanted me to provide some mentorship for those students, as well as use my automotive, healthcare, and entrepreneurial background and incorporate that into a video-based Arizona State curriculum-based science lesson plan. And so it was quite a challenge. I decided that it was something I would like to pursue because I hadn't had any charter school experience. And I started there in October of this past year. In September of this past year. And what I found was quite different than what I was expecting. So that's where you and I, when we had our conversation, I was just really kind of taken aback because my understanding is charter schools were supposed to be an alternative for families that are looking for a different educational experience for their child. And that's not what I found, Dr. Moore, at Bradley Academy.
So as you got deeper into it, your perspectives changed. And I'm assuming that you went in thinking that it was like any other school, it was an alternative school, but it was all about the education, correct?
Correct. I think what happens, you often, when charter schools are mentioned, they're presented and marketed as basically a better opportunity for your student than what you'll find in a public school setting. I think that's the general feeling, and that's certainly the feeling that I was working with. Unfortunately, that's not what I found at Bradley Academy. What I found was... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. First, I'd like to say my hat's off to you for being an educator. That's incredible for, you know, we need more sound teachers, more good teachers, people to apply themselves, especially for our young men. But in what you were saying at the end, do you find it that would probably be the case with most charter schools, that they aren't what they appear to be?
Well, I appreciate your question. I guess I can't make that statement as blanketly as I think it might be. It might need to be stated. I just have to go off of my one experience here with Bradley. However, you know, there's a lot of conversation about the whole charter movement starting back in the late 90s or so. And having had this experience, some of the research that I, you know, decided to go ahead and pursue is that there's a profit motive related to charter schools in general. And I think that's something that's unknown to a lot of parents when they decide to select a charter option. The focus is more on generating revenue than educating students, even though that's certainly not the way it's marketed.
Wow.
That's my bottom line takeaway from my experience there. In my case, my classroom, it's one of the smaller charter schools. It's been around in Arizona, I think, for 13 or 14 years. And the total students, somewhere between 80 and 90 for all three grade levels. But just to give you an example, they had no science supplies, no lab supplies, zero.
No.
Now,
they had the funding for it.
Yes, I can't speak to, you know, how their funding works. I would think that they should have the funding for it, because there is, my understanding is that the Federal Department of Education provides funding to the state of Arizona for the express purpose of distribution to, you know, the various charter schools. So I'm not an expert in that area, but that's my general understanding. So if you've got 80 or 90 students and you have just four partially working laptops for that number of students, that's another indication of, you know, what's going on with the allocation of resources.
That's incredible.
Paul, could you speak to – I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
So I was just going to make the point that if you have a science – my specific situation was I was hired to deliver a video-based science curriculum that was – that would be based on the standards required for students to be able to pass the Arizona state testing. I was supposed to do that with a video-based system. Well, part of the problem that I ran into was the video system they had at the school didn't function. It didn't work. So As a substitute teacher, I'm supposed to deliver a video-based lesson plan without the equipment to do it. So that's just another indication of what my experience was. Now, whether that's the case across other charter schools, you know, that's a topic for another day. But my specific experience at this particular school, this is what I was talking with Dr. Moore about. And, you know, he thought it would be, you know, it would be helpful to just kind of share that experience.
So, Paul, when you approached them and said, hey, look, I'm trying to deliver this curriculum, and I don't have the requisite equipment, what was their response?
Well, you know, having been around the track a little bit, as you mentioned, I've had a long career in the automotive industry with General Motors, long career in healthcare, having been in business for myself internationally, I have a lot of experience. And so when it became clear that there were some shortcomings that I was going to encounter in trying to be successful with this assignment, I went to the CEO of the school along with the superintendent for instruction and basically presented to them after being there a couple weeks some of the challenges that I was experiencing. And, you know, having been through situations, not specifically like this, but dealing with, you know, leadership in organizations, I presented what I thought was going well at the meeting, but then I also presented what I thought the major challenges were. And so at this meeting, the CEO of the school, the superintendent for instruction, the chief operating officer, there was a board member there at the meeting. And I basically hit three or four different areas. One was the fact that there basically was no supplies. You've got a science classroom with no lab supplies, no science equipment. The information regarding the video-based lesson, when I was at the meeting, I explained to them that I couldn't present the information on video because the video system in the room didn't work. They only had four computers that worked. Even my computer as an instructor, it didn't function properly. Specifically, you were not able to save any data onto the hard drive on the computer.
What?
That created some real problems just trying to function day-to-day in the classroom. Housekeeping was a problem. Having been a buyer, working with suppliers over the years, one of the things that we do when we make a supplier visit is we look at the housekeeping because that tells you an awful lot, not only about the leadership, but how the operation functions. And we had filthy classroom floors, at least my room. Let me clear that up. My classroom floor was filthy. And what I mean by filthy is standing dirt, loose dirt on the floor. And when I presented this information at the meeting, the response I got regarding the classroom floor was just because the floor wasn't shiny didn't mean that the floor was dirty. Okay? So.
Okay, I'm sorry, I have a question.
Sure.
And it's fine about, you know, the superintendent and the board members, wonderful George O'Joy, this was brought to their attention. But what about the parent? Were the parents brought or made aware of these mishaps?
I would have to say no. The parents are not aware of it. And, you know, that's one of the things that led Dr. Moore and myself to, you know, to have this conversation because, you know, when you're in the situation that I was in, I mean, I'd only been there 2 weeks. And with my background, I wasn't going to just sit around and, you know, just sort of grin and bear it. One of the things that we talked about extensively before I accepted the position was the fact that I wanted to make sure that the resources were available. The one thing that I explained to the hiring group the CEO, the superintendent that we're talking about, the board member was, my moral compass won't allow me to come in and earn a paycheck on the backs of the students. I mean, if they have a lesson plan that they want to have delivered, you know, I'm capable of doing that. But I'm not going to come in and be a babysitter and just collect a check. So the bottom line here is that that's it, essentially what ended up happening. Because those issues that we've been talking about never did get addressed. But specifically to address your question about the parents, no, I didn't make a I didn't make any parent calls, and I'm sure that the parents were not aware of, you know, the degree of the lack of resources that their students were, you know, not getting.
That's incredible, Paul, because you would think that, you know, education first and foremost is supposed to be about the transfer of knowledge. And I think that it's sad that we have a situation where the students are being so neglected. And by no means am I addressing that towards you. I'm saying I think that you're a hero standing in, you know, a bunch of muck trying to fix things, and it seems like no one really wanted to help you out. Now, if you could, I would ask you to speak a little bit more on, I know we talked about kind of how the school operated behind the scenes in terms of a corporation kind of taking over the school and what they did with the owner of the school. Is that something you're able to speak to?
But before you do that, James, good morning to everyone that's on the show. I got a quick question for the gentleman. Hello, sir.
Yes.
My name is Lady Sincere Patrice, for my real name. But I just have a question here. Doing research here, I found out that 1.3 million high school students drop out of high school every year. And sometimes it's due to they get pregnant. They find the classes are boring. They find that, you know, it's not worth their time. It's not worth a challenge.
Sure.
What do you say we do to keep these children interested? Because to have 1.3 million drop out every year, that's a large number. And then half of the students that drop out, it looks like it's male. And some of these students can't even read at a certain level to how they're supposed to be reading. So what do we do to keep these students going to school every year, to keep them from falling out? And, you know, I understand that there's various reasons for students dropping out of school due to pregnancy. I got to help out with family at home, or I have this going on or that going on. But what can we do to improve it?
Well, I appreciate your question, and that's something that I actually contemplate a lot in my role as a substitute teacher. So I guess I have to qualify my thoughts on this first by saying that I'm not an educator. My background academically is not in education, but just from my life experience and my career experience in three different industries, as well as my background as an entrepreneur, it's an issue that weighs on me a lot as I serve, because I'm in and out of a lot of schools. And part of the reason I think students drop out, in addition to what you shared, it's simply the curriculum isn't something that's engaging. I think there's a lot of students that drop out because they're bored, to be quite frank about it. They do have all kinds of issues, social economic issues, but a curriculum has got to be challenging, I think, for students. And that's on the backs of the administration and the teachers. As a sub, one of the things you find a lot is students are handed worksheets. If you come to school class after class and you have a worksheet that's put in front of your face, and, you know, you read the worksheet, you answer the questions, you turn it in. The next day you have a worksheet, you answer the questions, you turn it in. That can get pretty boring over time. So That's one area I think is at least partly the reason that some students, you know, don't finish, is because they're just not engaged. As a sub, one of the other things that I see happening is you have a lot of students whose behavior is disruptive, is the word I think I'll use here. And there's a lot of reasons for that. That disruptive behavior creates a real problem for teachers to be able to deliver the lesson plans that they have, to deliver the curriculum that they have. And this is an area, again, as a coming from more of a business corporate background into the education arena, it's kind of baffling for me because a lot of the student behaviors appear to go unaddressed. In other words, students are allowed to come to class day after day after day and disrupt without any appearance of anything being done to, you know, to address that. Now, again, I'm not an educator, so I don't claim to have an answer for it. But I think when charter schools enter the mix, I think some parents elect a charter school option, thinking that disruptive classrooms will be less, or certainly at a minimum, or perhaps, you know, not an issue. And that's not what I found with my experience either at Bradley Academy. So I hope that gives you some answer to, you know, to your question in terms of what my experience has been.
And Paul, they do not have proper policies in place to address said behavior, I'm assuming?
Well, I think there are certainly policies that are in place, but whether those policies are enforced becomes the issue.
Understood.
Okay.
Understood.
Yeah.
I don't want to cut you short, Paul, but I would love to hear you address, if you're able to speak to the question about what's going on behind the scenes with the owner and how school is operated in regards to government, if you're allowed to speak about
that. Well, what I can tell you about that, it's not firsthand knowledge, but, you know, having said that, my understanding is that this particular school was started by an African-American lady in the South Phoenix, Levine part of the city. And her focus was to provide an opportunity, an option, a better opportunity for that population. And the way I understand the charter business to work is that the charter holder presents documents to the Department of Education, U.S. Department of Education, and they review those documents, and there's some process where a charter is issued or granted to that charter holder, and then they can start their school. Well, my understanding is that and this is where Dr. Moore is coming from. There's a corporation that goes around that offers charter holders they offer to build them a facility from the ground up. And that offer is what was made to this charter holder at Bradley Academy. They were originally operated off of Central, I think between Western and Van Buren. And now they're over off of Lower Buckeye in a brand new facility that was constructed in, I believe it was 2011. Well, through this process, the company that comes in to provide the new facility, the charter now has to pay lease payments to the company that built the facility. And that's where the whole economic piece comes into the picture, because now monies that ideally would be going to education of the students is now being allocated to paying for the facility. So I think that's the area that Dr. Moore was referring to in some of the conversations that we had. So, you know, that's an area that you know, needs to be explored in a lot more detail. But my understanding from some of the preliminary research that I've done is that's a snapshot of how the charter industry works across the nation.
I was under the impression that charters functioned under a 501c3 corporate structure. Is that incorrect?
No, I think that's correct because that's where they – and that targets a certain population of students.
Right. Okay.
But again, I think the point that I would like to make sure is clear is that this is one substitute experience. And, you know, my focus in wanting to bring to your show was that for the students and parents who have who attend Bradley Academy, they would definitely want to do some homework with the administration there and make sure that their students are getting the education that they are promised.
And that's duly noted. You know what, we want to thank you for your information. It is very informative, and we want to thank you for dropping a little bit of light on something that is probably happening other places as well. And with that, we say thank you greatly.
I also wanted to thank. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Trey. I just wanted to thank him. Like I said, this is a Saturday. I know that a lot of folks have a day off, and he took time out to kind of enlighten us about some of the things that were going on. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, Paul, that you're not an educator. Respectfully, sir, I beg to differ. Anyone who takes time to sit down with the youth and try to enlighten and help them and adjust and ameliorate perspectives, you're an educator, my friend. You're definitely an educator.
Yes, wholeheartedly. Well,
I appreciate the kind words.
Go ahead. Well, everyone, we've reached that time, and we want to thank our special guest today, and we want to thank you for listening once again. Remember, raise your glasses, bottoms to the top, and for every idea that you have, know that nothing comes short, and every thought is warranted. For every step you take, and for every endeavor you make, we hope and pray that they're always on point.
On point. Thank you again, Paul, and see you next week, everyone.